It is time once again on Robin Hood Radio to bring in Brian Ross. It is Real News with Brian. Brian joins us on a Thursday morning on top of what he's been doing lately at the Hotchkiss Library as well. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning to you, Marshall.
And tomorrow you're once again back at the Hotchkiss Library.
Back at the library with Jerry Mitchell, who has written this terrific book, Race Against Time. Jerry is the legendary Mississippi investigative reporter, and he accounts in his book how he helped to get solved four different cases involving civil rights leaders, workers, young girls in a church who were killed by Klansmen and had gone sort of unprosecuted, no justice, until he got in there and figured out ways to either raise money or raise questions. And it's quite a stirring account of what could happen, how justice was so long delayed down there.
Well, you know, it's interesting because when I was a kid, my father was an entertainer, and we used to always every winter drive down to Florida, and we'd spend the winter in Florida. We'd have people teach us in Florida, but my father said on the way down, my mother would always drive us on, and he said, "Listen, I'm a Jewish entertainer, so when we get past North Carolina, make sure we don't stop till we get into Florida." that was back in the I was 55, 56. I mean, I remember as a kid seeing signs that said no blacks, no Jews. I mean, it was a rough time to be a minority back then.
It was, and you know, we can understand today how it still feels so wrong for so many people, that how they're treated by the police, how they're treated by the system. And look at the inequities in healthcare. The report out this morning, for instance, in the New York Times about the significant difference in deaths between people of color and people who are white, in large part because their underlying conditions, but also because they have less access to healthcare and poorer delivery of healthcare.
All right, so now I have been taking the lead. What would you like to speak about this morning?
Well, you know, we talked a couple of weeks ago, and it's going to happen again today. We've got a big decision coming out of the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
And we're going to find out whether the district attorney in Manhattan, Cyrus Vance, or two House committees are going to have access to President Trump's tax returns. It will be a major decision. Comes out sometime between 10 and 10:30 this morning. We're going to find out.
Now, what's interesting, and my view on taking a look at that, I think they are going to allow the Southern District of New York to look at it. I'm not sure, and if they allow anybody in the House or Senate, they will be closed committees, I think, and that's the best you can hope for. I don't have much hope that the Supreme Court is going to allow the release of his tax returns.
You know, it's true, but let's think back. You know, he's the first president in the last several decades who has not made public his tax returns. He's created this issue himself. The law for many seems quite simple, that in a criminal investigation of the kind that the district attorney in Manhattan's carrying out, no one is above the law there, and his tax returns should be available. His lawyers argued in court, well, if you did that, then 2,400 different district attorneys around the country could all begin to investigate the president. But the fact is, only one really is right now, and that's not a thought, but I don't think it's persuasive. And the justices, I recall actually hearing the oral arguments as they took place. They were on a teleconference, so we could broadcast them and listen to them. The justices asked a lot of penetrating questions, like, why should that be the case? Why is he above the law there? And the difference is whether you could charge a sitting president with a crime, but whether you could investigate the president, and the investigation also goes to others around him. And, you know, with Donald Trump, we're learning a lot about him. This book, I'm excited to see this book next week by his niece, Mary Trump. And the Times and the Journal all have now received copies. And it's very, very interesting, the chicanery that went on, where he just, she says, you know, he lies just as a standard practice. It comes easy.
You know, her book is going to be mostly recalling about stories given to her by her family members, but still, it is just another in the list of things that just pile up against this president, either in books by his own cabinet members, now by his own family members, and of course, she's the one who released the information on tax returns to the New York Times.
It's quite a story, because everyone wanted to know, well, where are the sources for the Times? How do they get these tax returns? And at the time, the White House and the president were calling fake news. It's not accurate. Well, it turns out she had access to some 19 boxes of material that came out of a lawsuit. She got involved with her brother in a big lawsuit against Trump because she thought the will had cut her out and they had a settlement. But 19 boxes, her lawyer said, well, we've got an extra copy. So she went in her pickup truck and picked up all 19 boxes and drove them right to the front door of the New York Times reporters, who must have been like manna from heaven to see someone show up with that kind of document dump, you know. And the Times reporters won a Pulitzer Prize for their investigation, which showed how that whole transfer of money from Fred Trump to Donald Trump was full of alleged fraud and questionable tax practices that gave him a head start, much more than the $1 million he always claimed he got from his father. You know, it was tens or hundreds of millions of dollars that was transferred probably without paying much of the estate tax that ordinarily people would pay.
It's interesting, because if you look back to the Daniel Ellsberg, he did that sort of dump with the Washington Post.
Absolutely. Well, the New York Times, then the Washington Post. He did both, you know, with the Pentagon Papers. You know, that for a reporter to have that kind of sourcing, we have the original documents turned over to you. You know, what could be better than that? You have to make sure they're authentic. But then that's a gift.
You know, but I think that's the great thing that we talk here, Brian, about news. The great thing about newspapers, and I'll give the New York Times and the Washington Post and a few other large papers a lot of credit, because they've done a lot of old-fashioned news covering over the past two and a half, 3 years with the president, things that have been sorely missing in news coverage for a long, long time.
No, they absolutely have, and they really, every morning, you know, I start my day, I have to read the New York Times and the Washington Post and the Wall Street Journal for serious reporting. Those three papers, ahead of all others, really have the kind of staffing and the kind of sort of devotion and dedication to doing that kind of reporting, no matter where it falls. You know, the Wall Street Journal editorial page tends to be very much pro-Trump, but the reporting, not so much.
Yeah, it's just nice to see. I like I said, I grew up, remember reporters like Jimmy Breslin, and you like to see superstar reporters, and I call them superstar reporters not because of their salaries or anything else, but they get involved in the story, and they really track it down till that they have the final nail in the coffin, and then they put it out. It's not like most people are used to the internet today, where stories just come out and go at whim.
Right, and thing you have to also remember is the editors who make the decisions are the ones who really, you know, are kind of, they're well paid, but they're the unsung heroes. They make the decision that reporters can take the time and the effort, you know, spend 6 months on a story, and you're not turning out anything else to put in the paper, and make the space available in the paper. You know, I certainly know at network television, you know, the evening newscasts, a story that goes longer than a minute and 45 seconds is almost documentary length these days. There's just not the place to put in that kind of serious reporting on those evening newscasts.
Well, maybe after the decision comes out, maybe I'll give you a call, get your reaction, and put it on the air tomorrow.
Absolutely. It'd be fascinating to see. I'd be really interested to see who's writing it. You know, Justice Roberts has become the swing vote. He's a very conservative swing vote, but he has made the difference in a lot of rulings. It was interesting, before we go, in the rulings earlier this week, in which they sort of gave protection certain employers didn't have to provide contraceptive coverage for their employees if because of religious reasons, and that teachers in religious schools could be fired if they don't sort of go along with certain beliefs. Those votes were 7-2. It was not close. It was close. It was not close at all.
No, I that was the interesting thing about that, and you can see why a majority of justices voted that way. But you can also look at the other way and say, well, geez, should you really be fired for your own personal beliefs?
Right, and it wasn't a great day for the women's reproductive rights, certainly.
No, absolutely.
I mean, that's a slippery slope that they're heading down. You can see where they're letting their religious beliefs go ahead of the individual women's reproductive rights, and that's a balance and a test. And we've got a very conservative court, and that's the way they're going to go.
All right. Well, we were recording this on Thursday morning, July the 9th. Brian, have a great time with the Hotchkiss Library and the Zoom event, which is free tomorrow. People can get more information at hotchkisslibrary.org. And we'll check in with you after the decision comes down.
That'd be great. Okay, Mars, we'll talk to you then.
Take care, Brian.
Bye-bye.
That is Real News with Brian Ross this morning here on Robin Hood Radio.